Easter should be the best day of the year. It's a celebration of the resurrection of hope. Come to Crossroads Church and celebrate an empty tomb and a living hope. Info and service times at crossroads.net.
Here on Stolen Lives, we discuss brutal and heartbreaking crimes against children. Themes may include child murder, torture, and sexual, domestic, and child abuse. I do try my best to remain respectful for the babies in these stories and leave out unnecessary details that, honestly, none of us need to know to understand the frustration of why and how this ever happened. However, if you find any of these themes triggering, this podcast may not be for you. Listener discretion is advised. March 2024, Wayne, Michigan. An 8-year-old girl is found by first responders not breathing and cold to the touch. She is only wearing a diaper with extensive bruising and swelling to her head and neck. The girl's mother initially claiming Lila had fallen down some stairs, before changing her story to her daughter was possessed, and an evil spirit compelled her to beat Lila to death. This is Lila's story.
It feels like just yesterday I found out I was having a baby girl. I will never understand why this tragedy has become our reality. Such a devastating loss of the most beautiful life. Rest in peace, baby girl. Until we meet again, I love you always and forever.
Lila Lynn Castle was born June 27, 2015, in Ann Arbor, Michigan, to parents Chelsea Duperon and Josh Castle. She was the second child born to the couple with an older brother. Lila was the cutest little girl you've ever did see. She had these bright blue eyes and blonde hair, a smile that you could not help but smile back. Duperon even describing her daughter as the most perfect baby you would ever meet. In March 2024, when our story takes place, Lila was in the third grade at Roosevelt McGrath Elementary. However, she was frequently absent. When Lila was at school, teachers would later describe her as being tired and withdrawn. Now, this is a sign that something isn't great within the home, because a well-rested, happy and secure child doesn't regularly miss school or come to school tired and withdrawn. So teachers voiced their concerns. But unfortunately, no official follow-up would come from this. Despite this, it seems school was Lila's happy place. She loved learning and was very curious about the world around her. Her classmates all adored her. Lila was friends with everyone. Lila would later be described by those who knew and loved her as a happy and sweet little girl, who was also very funny and witty. She loved to play outside every day and loved going to school. Her favourite music was Taylor Swift. Lila loved having her hair done with pretty little bows. Lila had this teddy bear that she would never go to sleep without, and like a lot of girls her age, she loved Disney movies, in particular Frozen. Lila knew all the songs from Frozen. But despite all these really incredible things about Lila Castle, she was also living in an unstable environment, where neglect and abuse were a daily occurrence. And this would only escalate throughout her short life. Prosecutors would later state in the criminal trial that Lila was so used to the physical violence that she would normalise being hurt, being in pain, which is so heartbreaking to me. But in reality, this is all that Lila knew. Child abuse was just a fact of life for her. In March 2024, when our story takes place, Lila's mother, 30-year-old Chelsea Duperon, according to later criminal reports, Duperon lived a life of instability and violence. She had these strange relationships. There were alleged mental health struggles. But while Duperon herself didn't have a great childhood and there was a lot against her, none of that excuses her for anything that happened against Lila. There are plenty of people, myself included, that grew up in unstable and neglectful or abusive households, and we don't end up in this generational cycle where we do the same to our own children. We work on ourselves. We forgive what happened to us. We learn what happened to us isn't acceptable or normal, and we do better for ourselves and our children. Now, a former classmate of Duperon would say they remember her being very violent, that Duperon was an awful person who made dozens of enemies while in high school. that there were many girls who threatened to fight her. There was even a post on Duperron's Facebook that said, "I'm trying to be a gentle parent, but it's like they think I'm a pussy or something." But for almost all of Lila's life, Duperron was raising the 8-year-old as a single parent. Now, this is incredibly stressful in many ways. It's isolating. I was a single mother myself for many years, and all the responsibilities, all the decisions are yours. There is no one to share that with, and it's really, really hard work. Lila's father was in and out of prison and never really there for his daughter. But instead of taking this challenge on and being there for her daughter and them growing together, Duperron became more erratic and neglectful in her parenting as Lila got older, especially in the months leading up to Lila's death. She never went to checkups with the doctor. As I said before, teachers reached out because she was often absent. And it was obvious to anyone that Lila was not getting the care she needed. She was seriously being neglected. Lila would come to school in dirty clothing. She had what was explained as having chronic absenteeism. And this means that Lila missed more than 10% of school days. And most of these, there really wasn't any reasoning for her not to be at school. But even though teachers recognised this and reported it to school officials, no formal follow-up was made. Child Protective Services weren't made involved. March 13th to 16th, 2024, Lila was absent from school. What we now know is, this is when the most severe abuse of Lila occurred, when she was in the most distress and in pain. She was barely able to leave her bed, just due to the severe extent of her injuries. But despite her daughter being in dire need of medical attention, Duperron would not call 911 during this time. However, that didn't mean Duperron wasn't living her life. She was seen at the supermarket acting like nothing was amiss. We are just going to take a quick break now for a word from one of our sponsors. Around 5 early in the morning of March 16th, 2024, 30-year-old Chelsea Duperron would call 911 to say her daughter Lila wasn't breathing. Police were then dispatched to the home that was located on Phyllis Street in Wayne, Michigan. Here they found Lila laying on her bedroom floor, unresponsive and not breathing. She was cold to the touch. What was immediately clear to authorities was she had been viciously assaulted. There was severe swelling and bruising to her head, neck and face, all in different colours and stages of healing. An older leg wound that would have needed medical intervention for weeks before. Emergency responders transported Lila to the hospital, even though it was clear she was already long gone. When the autopsy was completed, the medical examiner determined that Lila had died from blunt force trauma to her head. The extensive amount of swelling that she had actually had to her head and face had left Lila unrecognisable. This massive blunt force trauma had led to her brain swelling, which had then led to brain damage and had ultimately killed her. Now, Lila's mother, Duperron, first told police that her daughter had been just fooling around near the stairs when she fell down, that it was only a terrible accident. But it was clear from what the medical examiner had seen that a fall down the stairs would not have caused the injuries that Lila had sustained. Because if that was what actually happened, she would have had injuries to other parts of her body consistent with a fall down the stairs. Now, understandably, investigators were getting incredibly frustrated with Duperron, her version of events, as her story just kept changing. The officers in this second interview noticed that all throughout their questioning, Duperron just kept fidgeting. She could not sit still, regularly repositioning her body. At first, the officers wrote this off as nervousness. But then they noticed Duperron was trying to hide her right hand and arm, which was swollen and bruised. The investigator flat out asked her what had happened. Was her arm usually bruised up like that? Duperron not responding at first, but when pressed further, Duperron started to panic, insisting she had nothing to do with anything that happened to her daughter, that instead it was bad spirits that had killed her daughter. That an older woman had come out of nowhere in her home from the basement, and it was this woman who was responsible for Lila's death. And then Duperron's story would change yet again, when investigators called her out on the implausibility of this happening. Duperron would then say this old woman was actually an evil spirit, and this ghost led her to chase Lila around the home and then down the stairs. That the spirit had possessed her to hit her daughter. That it was Lila who was actually crazy at the time. However, Duperron would say she didn't exactly remember hitting her little girl. that the only reason she knew she did was because Lila had told her afterwards. This was how authorities would come to discover that Lila had been assaulted 3 days prior to the 911 call, March 13, 2024. Duperron had said she didn't get any medical attention for her daughter because she believed she was getting better, making taking her to the hospital unnecessary. But that wouldn't be the case, because 3 days later when 911 was called, Lila would be dead. When emergency services arrived at the home, first responders realised that Lila was dressed in only a diaper, which honestly didn't make any sense, as Lila had been completely toilet trained and she had been for years. When investigators questioned Duperron why her daughter was wearing a diaper, she claimed that after Lila was injured, it was too hard for her to take herself to the bathroom. So to Duperron, this was an easier solution. But that wasn't all, because the house smelt. It was extremely unclean. But the main reason for this smell was because the diaper Lila had been wearing at the time. She had been wearing it for days, relieving herself into this diaper, showing further neglect and, honestly, a lack of care and love from Duperron. The kitchen was full of dirty dishes and rotting food, essentially showing this lack of responsibility from Duperron had been ongoing. Chelsea Duperron was arrested and charged with felony murder and first-degree child abuse. She was held without bail. Duperron showing a total lack of remorse and emotion during this entire process. The closest investigators ever got to a confession from Duperron was one moment when she slipped up and said, "I didn't mean for her to die." This statement would later be used in the criminal trial. But this is the closest Duperron ever got to taking any responsibility for what happened to her daughter. The same day as Lila was found dead, Duperron's live-in boyfriend, Daniel Probst, was also brought into the police station for questioning. Probst told police that everything was normal in the home the previous week, but then he and Duperron got into an argument, and he left and didn't come back for several days. He wouldn't say what the argument was about, though. On the day he returned, March 14, 2024, Probst had come home from work at around 3:30 p.m. to find his girlfriend standing outside pointing towards the house. She was talking about how Lila was possessed. When Probst went inside the home, he found the little girl lying on the floor with lots of water around her. That she was responsive at this point and responding to him. Probst said he picked up Lila and carried her to her bedroom, placing her in her bed. He noticed that she was clearly in distress, but since she wasn't his child, he didn't think it was his responsibility to get help or call the authorities to report the abuse. The next day, March 15, 2024, Probst said he spoke to the 8-year-old and asked her what happened the previous day. Lila said her mother had been listening to music when she suddenly attacked her. Lila said she ran to the basement and hid, but Duperron had tricked her to come back out again, that her mother had poured water on her and started hitting her. Only 2 days later, Lila Castle would be dead. Probst also said he'd previously heard his girlfriend talking about spirits, but had never been anything this extreme before, and that Duperron had never hurt her daughter before. Daniel Probst would also be arrested and charged with an accomplice to the crime after the fact, but he made bail. Investigators said that if Duperron or Probst had called 911 the day Lila was injured, she could have been saved. But no. She was placed into her bed and left to die when Duperron went out to buy Vaseline, diapers, heating pads and alcohol for herself. Apparently Duperron had a drinking problem. Her relatives also suggested in media interviews that they believed she was also using drugs. Duperron had several drink driving charges to her name, some with Lila in the car with her. Lila's family started a GoFundMe to help her grieving father Josh with all the expenses he was now facing. But Duperron and her family would go to social media to tell anyone who would listen that he didn't deserve any help, because he had abandoned Lila by signing away his parental rights. They also claimed Josh didn't pay child support. However, this would later be proven to be all lies. Josh always paid child support on time, and had only had his parental rights taken away after there was unproven allegations made against him by Duperron. These allegations were never investigated, and Josh was never charged. Duperron had also been withholding Lila from her father's side of the family for months prior to the murder. In fact, Lila's paternal grandmother had not seen her granddaughter for 4 years. Heartbreakingly, She would be the one who had to identify the girl's body after Duperron refused to for unknown reasons. So this would be the first time to see Lila in 4 years, lying there cold and battered on a morgue table. We are just going to take a quick break now for a word from one of our sponsors. Lila was friends with many of the other children in the neighbourhood. One in particular, Lila spent lots of time at her house, sometimes for days at a time. The mother would speak to the news media about how Probst was abusive towards Duperron and Lila. She also claimed that Probst broke into their home many times. One time, he went to their house in the middle of the night to grab Lila and take her home, even though she was supposed to be spending the night. And then another time that Probst had come to the home, he violently dragged Duperron out by her hair. She was visiting with the neighbours at the time, before he started beating on her right in the front yard. And even though there was a police report filed on this incident, when Duperron was later questioned, she lied and said that her boyfriend had not done this. This neighbour of Duperron said they were worried about Lila and they often tried to look out for her, though they never saw any signs of abuse. They often heard Probst yelling at her and Duperron. One time they even heard him yelling, "You want something to cry about? I'll give you something to cry about."
Neighbors say they were concerned about what was happening at this home. So they looked out for Lila, never saw any signs of abuse, but were worried about what else they saw and heard here.
I could hear him yelling at her, not only the mother, but the child. You want something to cry about? I'll give you something to cry about. I mean, who speaks to their kids like that? I went to the police with videos from my cameras. And I showed them the things that I saw was going on. And they told us if we ever saw abuse on the child, to let them know.
Now, neighbor Jason Wilhoit remembering Lila instead of trying to watch out for her.
Fantastic kid, playing in the front yard, cartwheels, just a lovable kid, funny kid. Jokes, I'm just very talkative, cheery, always happy when she was over here.
Chelsea Duperron was arraigned on her charges and she pled not guilty. She was also ordered not to have any contact with her boyfriend and to undergo a psychiatric evaluation. During her arraignment, Duperron was seen smirking and she appeared completely remorseless for what she had done. After the evaluation, she was deemed competent to stand trial. The prosecution called Lila's injuries unfathomable. That in her autopsy reports, she didn't even look like a child. She was unrecognisable because she had been beaten that badly. Apparently, Duperron had also put some makeup on her dead child prior to calling 911 in an effort to cover up what she had done. The prosecution also said the sheer brutality that the 8-year-old had suffered was nothing like they'd seen in their entire careers. The prosecution also said they wanted to pursue life in prison without the possibility of parole.
The sheer brutality that innocent 8-year-old Lila suffered on March 13th of 2024 is really like nothing I've ever seen in my 5 years of handling child abuse cases.
Assistant Wayne County Prosecutor Aaron Wilmoth says nobody called 911 until Saturday when 8-year-old Lila Lynn Castle was already dead.
July 1st, 2025, Chelsea Duperron changed her plea to guilty to second-degree murder. She was given a sentence to 50 years, of which she needs to serve 28 years before being eligible for parole. I am frustrated at this. I would have hoped that under a lesser charge, to be given the opportunity to one day walk a free woman. I am frustrated there is no obligation there, whereas Duperron was ordered to say what actually happened to her daughter, what she did to Lila, and the horrors this sweet little girl faced. As a further slap to the memory of Lila and her memory, Daniel Probst has since had his charges dropped due to lack of evidence of his involvement in the murder, meaning he walks away not having to answer for why he did nothing to help Lila and why the 8-year-old had to die a painful and lonely death. Lila's grandmother, Terry Castle, gave a victim impact statement to the court, quote, "Her lies now fully revealed have not only devastated our family, but in her selfishness also tore apart hers as well. By murdering my granddaughter, Chelsea destroyed her world." Unquote. Lila Castle's funeral was held April 20th, 2024, at Stark Funeral Home in Ypsilanti, Michigan. She was then cremated. Lila's Aunt Elizabeth said about her niece, quote, "She shines so bright. Just know the whole world is on your side, baby girl. The world. Unquote. If you have your own thoughts and theories on the story we discussed today, or any stories we talk about here on Stolen Lives, please search Stolen Lives Podcast on Facebook, like the page so you don't miss an episode, and join the Stolen Lives discussion group to talk about your thoughts and theories. You can also talk to us on Instagram, Stolen Lives Podcast. If you like what you heard today, we would appreciate it if you share this episode on your social media of choice and subscribe and leave a positive review on your podcast app. Today's episode was researched and written by me, Ali. Hosting and production was also by me, Ali. Music is by Mayu.